Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Dot Black Dad podcast. My name is Marvin Harrison. Super excited today to bring you a conversation which is about exploring vaccinations, but specifically around measles. There has been an increase in cases in London. I've got three people with me today to help broach the conversation and really discover what is happening in London with the Black community around measles. We have Dr. Julie, Assad and the Tapwa, who are all here with different perspectives who will give us a much more insight. We have Dr. Julie, who is a GP herself and is someone who has really considered whether she wanted to get the vaccination for her son. We also have the Tapwa, who has also done a lot of community work and outreach, specifically around measles and beyond. And we have Assad, who is someone who actually had measles as a young adult, and he talks to us about his experience with measles. And to be honest, it's really eye-opening. Thank you so much for watching with us. Make sure that you are subscribed when you are watching this. And also make sure if you have any questions afterwards, please email us at hello@dopeblack.org. And today I'm joined by Dr. Julie, Assad and the Tapwa. How are you all?
Good.
Amazing.
I really appreciate you coming down and having this really important conversation with us. Look, I'm somebody that I just live in a curious space. Our platform is here to find answers on behalf of our community. You all represent a particular stance and relationship. Is it worth you giving us a bit more insight into what your curiosities or what your journey has been with measles? We'll start with you.
Yeah, so I'm a GP currently and I work in Ladbroke Grove. Ladbroke Grove is based in Kensington and Chelsea, and we currently have one of the largest proportions of unvaccinated people for MMR in London. Wow. And we've been engaging with the communities around Ladbroke Grove and Kensington and Chelsea. And also I've been doing some work with NHS England and a really, really cool group called Inspire in London. And they're linked with NHS England and they're working with communities trying to promote health and also link that promotion back to the healthcare system. So it's been really good.
Wow. Amazing. Assad, what about yourself?
Mine's a bit more personal in terms of I caught measles when I was younger, about 16, 17. And so just here to talk about my experience and how that's affected me and, you know, in terms of keeping up with vaccinations with my kids, being a father.
So were you unvaccinated at the time or you were vaccinated?
I believe I was. I've spoken to my mom about the situation. And yeah, it just seems to be one of those things where, because I was born in Kenya and that whole transition journey sort of thing might have been missed, but yeah, so just here to talk about my journey and hopefully encourage other people to take the vaccines for their kids.
Amazing. And Dr. Julie, what about yourself?
So I'm also a GP.
It's kind of in your name, but cool.
So I'm based in Dartford. That's where I do my what I call salaried permanent position, but also I locum around different practices in London and Kent, mostly South London. So I have a lot of experience working with Black parents who perhaps don't want to vaccinate their children for whatever reason, due to maybe bias, being a bit anxious about being guinea pigs, about giving their child the vaccine. Also the disproven theory about autism as well. So there's a lot of concerns within our community. So I'm often addressing that almost weekly with my patients. And then also I've been a mother, well, I am a mother to a 2-year-old. And then even myself as a GP, I know all the information, but I still had second thoughts when it came to vaccinating my son, especially with the MMR. Yeah, so I can relate to what parents are talking about when they're not fully trusting the system.
Yeah.
So even though I have gone ahead and done it now, but I was really contemplating.
There was a pause.
Yeah, there was
so,
a pause.
So what actually is the context for measles in London? And is it different for Black people specifically, or is it the same or for everybody?
So in terms of the number of cases of measles in London so far, there's been 26 cases since the 29th of January.
Oh,
and
wow.
I know this may not sound that much because there's only 26 and how many people live in London. But the reason why it's concerning is because in 2022, there was only 54 cases across all of the UK.
Yeah.
And the fact that this is increasing year upon year. So last year it was 368 across the UK with 122 cases in London. And now we have 26 cases in London since January. And it's only been just over a month. So the cases are increasing. I think the reason why we're more concerned about the Black population or Black children is because we tend to have lower uptakes of the vaccine as well. So even though the statistics is small for now, we do know that measles is highly infectious virus. So all it takes is for one child in the wrong environment to infect up to 9 people who are unvaccinated. So this is why it's an important topic to talk about now.
And so what are some of the barriers why Black people specifically aren't taking them that you're aware of?
It's a very complex question. And it's usually multifactorial. And each person you'd ask would have slightly different reasons. But on a population level, we know that generally it's linked to roughly about 3 or 4 things. So the first thing is confidence. So lots of people don't trust either the vaccines themselves or the health system that's providing the vaccines. In about 1998, there was a paper that came out by a doctor called Andrew Wakefield. And in that paper, he linked autism to the MMR vaccine. And straight after that, a couple of years after that, we found that the uptake of the vaccine really dipped in about, and 2008 was one of the lowest actually uptakes that we had. And the cases really, really rose around that time. Since then, that paper has been looked further into, and it's been found that Dr. Wakefield actually acted dishonestly. And there was a lot of flaws in the way that link was actually made. They only had about 12 children in that in the study, and you can't apply, you can't decide that something causes something just based off
a very small sample.
Small sample. And also that study, it was based on recall. So they just asked a few parents, you know, were your children exposed to MMR, and did they then get any sort of developmental problems?
So
after
it was
that?
Almost anecdotal, the way.
Very anecdotal, based on recall, and you just can't apply causation based off that kind of a study.
Yeah. What does recall mean in terms of the processes of engaging in patient care?
So recall specifically in this case means that, so if you want to check if something causes something else, what you tend to do is you tend to follow up cases. So you look at people who are vaccinated and people who aren't vaccinated. And then you then follow them up over a few years and see the cases of MMR that actually develop, sorry, of measles that develop from that. But in this case, they've just found some people who have autism or developmental problems and then asked, were you ever exposed to the MMR vaccine?
Right, okay.
Now, if you do that, you'll obviously find that most children have had an MMR vaccine around that time. And it just so unfortunately happens that if you have your MMR vaccine at the age of 3 years and 4 months, the signs of autism tend to develop around that time. So then parents think, what was the last sort of medical intervention that my child had? And then they automatically just place it back on the MMR vaccine. But that scare, even though it's been looked into further, there's been lots of studies that have been done after that, and they found that there actually genuinely isn't any link. But I think that thought process has really lingered in lots of families. And there is still that fear that perhaps this vaccine can cause autism,
but
it doesn't, and we know it doesn't. And that myth needs to be debunked completely. It's not true. So that's one thing. The other thing that I've noticed more specifically with the Black community sometimes is there's a huge fear of the system. And it's based on truth and based on fact. We've historically been discriminated against in this country, and especially in London as well. And I think that in itself has created lots of exclusion from politics, exclusion from social circumstances, exclusion from economic circumstances as well. But then it also happens in the healthcare system where Black people sometimes feel that it's not really for them. And I've heard that so many times over and over again. But the problem with that is because we've already been excluded, that in itself creates more health inequalities because we then start to reject things that the health system gives to us.
Yeah.
And even though we know the vaccine is actually effective, but because we fear that system that it comes from, we reject something that can actually help us. Mm. So that's another huge, huge problem, yeah. Fear and mistrust.
What about you, Dr. Julie? Because you are, you know, qualified, you do work in this field, yes. And you still, with your own child, had a pause moment. What was creating that pause for you?
So I think, again, the distrust in the system to a certain extent. So obviously, I practice medicine. I believe in medicine fully. But there's always that voice, especially with me. I think I had a bit of postpartum anxiety,
right.
Especially around the time that we were meant to be given the vaccine 1 year after giving birth.
Mm.
I was still worried about just things that don't really matter, things that I was worried that he's going to get sick. If he has a bit of a fever, what's going to happen? Because again, I know the worst case scenario. So my mind's always jumping to that.
Mm.
So I was worried, okay, if I give him this vaccine and there's this small chance that he may have autism, am I doing the right thing? So it was all these irrational thoughts, essentially. Mm. So that's what made me like pause and like, okay, am I doing the right thing? But then what also made me go ahead and have to give him the vaccine was the fact that I am vaccinated.
Mm.
I had both my vaccinations. I think I'm normal. I think I'm okay. Yeah. I think I'm healthy. So I thought, okay, realistically, myself, I've had it. My husband has had it as well. And then also I just did the research as well. And I hate to see my son sick.
Mm.
When he's sick, I'm sick. I can't sleep. I can't eat. I'm just holding him. I'm panicking, worried. And the fact that measles can be such a serious infection as well. So we know that 1 in 5 children end up going to hospital.
Mm.
I've been in hospital and I've waited 10 hours to be seen by a doctor. And it's just the worst thing ever. You're tired, your baby's tired, they've got fever, they're irritable.
Mm.
It's awful.
So you still have to be functional the next day.
Exactly, exactly. So I have to go to work the next day. So I was just, so the thought of that, I thought, okay, I can avoid potentially him getting this sick.
Mm.
I thought I have to give him the vaccine.
Yeah.
And again, there's a serious complications. 1 in 15 children end up with sepsis. So this is an infection in your bloodstream, which can lead to death or can lead to serious complications such as blindness or even meningitis when the infection goes into your brain, and that can lead to long-term disabilities. So all of these things, wow. I was like, I can't risk that. These statistics, 20% chance, 1 in 15, I can't risk it. So I had to give my son the vaccine. Yeah.
Asad, you actually had measles as a young adult. Like, please explain what that must be like for you. What did you experience?
so it was about 15 years ago now. I just remember being very sick, you know, and to this day, I still don't know where I got it from. Mm. I just remember sort of finishing GCSEs, getting results, and then signing up to college and then preparing for my summer break.
You know?
I'm sure everyone has been looking forward to that sort of transition.
Mm.
And then I just literally just got sick out of nowhere. And I thought, okay, maybe it's just like a flu. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how it starts, yes. You know. But then for me, you know, I think I was in a period where I had like low immune system at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I was like getting sick regularly. And so it just made me even worse. So I ended up missing about 5 weeks of that summer.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain the feeling in detail? Like what, like if I was sitting at home and I was like, because obviously a headache could feel like 100 things, including a headache.
Yeah.
You know, drowsiness can feel like 100 things. What was the actual emotional or the feelings that you went through?
So for me, it was the fact I couldn't get out of bed.
Wow.
I literally could not get out of bed. So I was bedridden. I'll say out of those 5 weeks, up for about 4, real lack of energy, no appetite.
Mm.
One of the worst bits around it was the conjunctivitis that I got in my eyes. Morning, I couldn't open my eyes. I literally
That's crazy.
Used to take about 10.
What is conjunctivitis? Minutes. Is that just when you get, what is that, pus in your eyes? What actually is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you get infection of the lining of your eye.
Mm.
So I don't know, I think probably most of us have had it at some point in our lives. So your eye is really irritated. It's red, it's watery, it feels sore. You might not be able to look at bright light. So yeah, it's awful. Yeah.
Man, this sounds terrible.
And yeah, I couldn't open, every time I wake up in the morning, I couldn't open my eyes for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And so it was just very, you know, my friends checked up on me. I had my mom, but obviously she had to go work, etc. But I was just felt alone during that period as well. Just it was emotionally draining as well. I think just in that period of my life, you know, getting excited for a new chapter. And sort of not being able to go along that journey with my friends, etc. But I was at home. I just felt sick, bedridden. I obviously had the itchy skin as well. And in that period, I just lost a lot of weight. Mm. You know, I'd been exercising quite a bit, you know, getting ready for summer. And then, the t-shirts I'd bought in that, you know, before, like, they were too big for me by the end of that time. I just couldn't eat. Mm. And then another bit was around, I just had my scalp. It just affected my skin a lot as well. Mm. I don't know whether that's a black people thing or what, but I remember being able to go out, get my first haircut during that summer. Like, I literally just had so much, like, my head was just flaky.
Wow.
It wasn't even like dandruff. It was just my skin just falling off, and it was just dry. Mm. And so it definitely affected me emotionally, physically, affected my confidence, you know, in terms of going into college. Affected also my mum as well, in terms of I was being sick. She did her best, obviously, to stay home, look after me, but she also had work, etc. So in a way, yeah, it just affected a lot of things. It wasn't just me that was affected. I had my little brother as well. Luckily, he was vaccinated, so he was fine. But for me, it did affect the family sort of dynamics in terms of that summer and me personally.
Yeah. How does that dynamic then change your relationship with vaccinations? Like, you know, now you've had the experience.
Yeah.
Does it just make you more confident? Like, have you become an advocate in your spare time?
That's why he's here.
Like, don't get me wrong, I'm still black first. I do still, like Doctor was saying, I still have those sometimes mistrust.
Yeah.
And second guessing things, you know, all different types of other vaccines that we've come across in the last couple of years. But when I think about it and I think about my kids, you know, I've got two kids, you know, you have to research up on, I've researched for myself, seeing the effects in terms of what's positive and what's not. And like Dr. Julie said as well, you've looking at that risk factor, where would you rather fall in when it comes to looking after your kids? So that's where it's led me to. So for the measles, yeah, I'm a big advocate.
That's
what we're here to talk about today.
In terms of just general misconceptions, like, what are some of the other things that kind of get said as a way to deflect or to avoid actually taking the vaccine?
So I've heard that, the vaccine contains pork.
Does it?
So it contains gelatin, but there's two types of vaccine. So one of them does contain gelatin, the other one doesn't.
Okay.
So if you don't want the vaccine that contains gelatin, maybe because you're Muslim or from the Jewish community, you need to let it be known at your appointment, because they don't automatically give it to you.
All right, okay.
So it's something that you do need to say before your appointment, so they can make sure they have it in stock for you.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I've seen or heard about. Another thing is about, this is going to sound really crazy, but I have heard it from a patient where they said that, the vaccine is a mark of the beast from like religious background. So they're saying that, you know, this is more so to do with probably COVID, but they probably apply the same sort of knowledge. So the fact that when you had the vaccine, you're allowed to do certain things, but if you don't have the vaccine, you're not allowed to travel, you're not allowed to do this. It limits it restricts what you're allowed to do. So these are the sort of things that I hear in terms of, like, there's a clash between, I guess, religion / medicine as well. People also have their faith and they're like, no, I'll pray about it, that I don't need to be vaccinated, I can pray about it, God will protect me. So all of these things are the things that do need to just talk about and try and debunk some of the myths in a respectful way. It's really difficult, but they're delicate discussions that need to be had.
Did you have any sort of bizarre interactions when you told people what had happened? Were you a mark of the beast now?
No, do you know what? No, like, I'm open about it, you know. I'm here to talk about it. You know, my friends were like, where were you? So I was like, I was at home, I had the measles. So it was, but obviously we were young. But I do have friends now who do go along that same line of thinking, in terms of mark of the beast. And I guess the only thing you can do is try to educate people as much as you can. But no, I've not had any.
But if we're being honest, like, I think, like, I come from a Jamaican background, and we have, you know, conspiratorial ideas about our relationship with the government and healthcare services, you're obviously in it. And it's not like you can just enter those services willy-nilly, like 7 years of education plus more. Yeah. So you've done the groundwork. And it's not just, it's not really even about, like, I want us to honor our community in this. I think that's the important part. It's not just about our community understanding this. It's also about, you know, the healthcare industry having a better relationship with us so that we can answer these questions. I suppose this is a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
How important is doing that work, like, for our community and trust building?
Yeah, I'd say it's very important.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When we have a low uptake of vaccines, one of the first steps we do is actually engage the community to find out what the reasons why they don't want to take the vaccine actually is. And then based off that, then you actually then can use interventions to actually increase that uptake. So it's very important. If people don't trust the vaccines, you're not going to get them to get that vaccine. So I'd say it's probably one of the key factors. And we have lots of determinants of health, for example, housing, water, healthcare. But actually, we're now thinking and realizing that trust in the health system is actually one of the big determinants of people's health.
One of the things I've heard people say is that change travels at the speed of trust. So if you don't trust the system, nothing's going to change. So we need to make sure we really put that groundwork in terms of, you know, interacting with community leaders, using platforms like yours just to get people out talking about these things, talking about both sides of the stories about judgment as well. I think, yeah, that's the most important thing that we can do in terms of getting people to start to trust the system again, because lots have happened. Often our voices are the easiest to ignore, despite us needing the most help in the community. So there's a lot of reasons why we don't trust the system, and we just need to try and rebuild that trust again.
So are there any initiatives or campaigns that are currently active that are trying to break this down currently?
So I'll say the Inspire program, which me and the TAP are both part of. So
tell me more about the Inspire program. What's that about?
So in terms of the Inspire program, essentially it's a program where we're trying to improve the lives of Black Londoners through education, through different community initiatives. In fact, we even have a Black Inequality or Black Health Inequality Summit on the 25th of March, which is the first of its kind, where we're going to bring together different organisations across London just to really showcase the work that we're doing all in silos, because we're doing the work often with minimal resources without any credit. And we're just doing it because we know that no one else is going to do it for us. We need to take it upon ourselves, because at the moment, it doesn't seem like our health is being prioritised. So we're doing it ourselves. So this is a platform just to really just show what we're doing, what people are doing, and also try and get more funding as well. Because right now we're underfunded. There's only so much we can do with the amount of funding. Everyone's just doing small little bits together, but we really want to bring us all together as one organisation, one Black community, and just really elevate the work that we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that's really important is that there has, as you mentioned earlier, a recent increase in measles outbreaks in London. Yeah. Like, is there any urgent actions that can be done or we as a community should be doing? How do we make this like urgent? How do we get something done about it?
So, let you go.
Yeah, so I think as a community, we should really start to check our status, if we've been vaccinated or not. I think lots of people aren't sure if they've been vaccinated.
How would you know?
So lots of children that were born in this country actually have a red book, and that red book contains the vaccination history for your child. So that's the first step.
But if you're like me in an ambiguous late 30s, early 40s space, does that still exist? Where would I find it? Is it online? I assume it's not online, is it?
So you could actually just call the GP and find out from the GP.
Okay, cool.
They're the best ways of finding out currently. Yeah.
Cool. So what do we do? Like, how do we accelerate the importance of this and try and bring it home?
So I think, first of all, spread the word. So platforms like this, I think going into schools, maybe at the school gates before they drop the kids or after when they're picking them up, just letting people know about, you know, this is on the increase. Have you vaccinated your child? If you don't know, this is the ways that you can find out, like what the TAP was said. I think also making it easier for parents to book these appointments. So me, like, even myself, like, I don't have time to be calling up the GP waiting for hours, well, not hours, but like half an hour to get through to someone to book the appointment. So maybe if they send out links. So I know there's some practices are doing this, sending out links to parents so they can just book themselves into clinics, and also making these clinics quite convenient for parents. So rather than it being between Monday and Friday, 9 to 5, maybe do it on a weekend where some of us, well, most parents would be off. Because again, even I keep saying myself, I find it difficult just to go to my son's appointments because I'm at work, and then I feel guilty missing work to go and take into appointments. So these are the sort of things that we can do. And obviously community outreach, going into faith groups and just really just spreading the word and making sure that people are educated about it and know about the situation.
And is there any kind of personal stories that you think, I know you obviously you've shared yours and you talked a bit before about your relationship with your child. Like, what was the whole journey? What was the complete experience to go from being a health professional, pausing on it, then being able to actually do it? And then how did you feel afterwards about it? Like, also, what did your people around you say? Because I mean, I assume they come to you for leadership in this particular area.
No, absolutely. Like? So I have my mother-in-law who's very much natural, vegan, sort of believes in holistic medicine and lifestyle medicine. And obviously I have my parents who are just like, go and vaccinate your child. What are you waiting for? And I have my friends as well. So I spoke to my friends about it and I was like, you know what? Just being honest, I'm having like thoughts like, is it the best thing to do? So again, they just went through it logically with me. Like, you've been vaccinated, you're fine. These are the statistics. What is it that you're really worried about? Look at the percentage, if even possible, that this will happen. Yeah. So I think I just thought through it logically and I thought, you know what? Like I said, I hate to see my son sick. I have to vaccinate him. So I went ahead and booked the appointment.
Yeah. But is there a class element that plays at this? We obviously sometimes when we talk about the Black community, we ignore the class, race, intersect. And so we kind of pretend that everybody is in the same boat. How is class create an impact in there? What does that actually even look like, if anything?
So I think there is a link between deprivation index and uptake of the vaccine. So more deprived communities tend to take vaccines less than the more less deprived communities. But I think with measles specifically, we sometimes find that even less deprived communities sometimes don't take the vaccine. And I think that's because they've looked into some studies like this Wakefield study, they've read about it and they feel empowered to not take that vaccine. So this is one of those vaccines where it's actually a combination of both, where you can see it's in the more deprived or in the less deprived as well. But I think specifically for this podcast, I think I've noticed that, and I've seen that in maybe two or three occasions where I've spoken to a mom about the vaccine and they've declined it because dad isn't keen on having it. And I think in the Black community, there's something to be said about how fathers lead the community in terms of looking after their health. Because I think sometimes moms, if dad isn't very keen on, dad is a bit sort of hesitant, mom will just not make that decision and let dad make that decision. So we really need to, as Black fathers, step up the game and actually protect our children and our families from illnesses.
That is something I never would have thought of in terms of like patriarchy kicking in and trying to play a role in such a really important and pivotal thing. What are some of the sort of effective ways to address misinformation, debunk myths? Like, how do you do that? Like, in a way where there's so much, I assume there's probably more misinformation in WhatsApp groups than there are available NHS websites.
Yes.
How do you go up against something so powerful as a WhatsApp group with aunties in it?
I think you have to direct people to sources of information that have been verified. So there's the platform called YouTube Health, where these videos and the ones that have been verified by YouTube Health actually have a little tick on it. So therefore, you know that, okay, any information you're getting from there is not just based on myths. They're actually based on scientific evidence, evidence-based research. So platforms like that, essentially, obviously speak to your GP. There's the NHS website as well, www.nhs.uk, that you can go to, and you can look at both the MMR vaccine and also there's another page on measles specifically. So these are the sources that I would recommend to people. And these are the things that I send to my patients.
Mm. We did some work around COVID because we weren't necessarily driving people to do it. We more wanted to pose the question of like, what do we know and what don't we know? Mm. And I think a big question was around how quickly COVID-19 vaccines were developed. People had never seen anything like that before. Has that helped understand vaccinations better or actually made it harder post?
Can you ask that question one more time? Just like,
so vaccine, COVID-19 created a massive conversation around vaccinations. One of the big things that happened was people were asking, how do you develop a vaccine that's that complicated for something we never knew so quickly? So it's like, it can't be healthy.
Yeah.
Has that helped create an educational understanding around vaccines, or has that made it harder?
I think it's probably a bit of both. So in 2019, vaccine hesitancy was listed by the WHO as a global threat.
Wow.
And I think with COVID-19, like you said, with the misinformation going around, there's anti-vax groups that I sometimes see down my street just, you know, saying lots of different things that aren't necessarily true. So I think there's definitely been a growth of vaccine hesitancy. Mm. But I think at the same time, there's people that are probably asking more questions now, because before they might have taken it blindly and just said, you know, it's fine, I'll take it. But now, because of all this information, they may not refuse it, but they might delay it. So I've had occasions where some parents might decide that actually, I don't want to have all these vaccines together in one go, because I'm now worried that my child might be overloaded with vaccines. Mm. I want to have one today and then come back in 3 months and have another one. Yeah. Mm. So they create their own schedule.
Yeah.
But there's a huge problem with that, because vaccines, they've been scheduled to give you that vaccine at the time where your child is most vulnerable.
Mm.
So if you're delaying things, you're actually exposing your child to more risk by doing that. And also, the overload theory has been debunked so many times that there isn't evidence to show that if you have multiple vaccines in one go, it actually hurts your child, because each child is exposed to thousands of germs every day. And what we're giving the vaccines is just a small proportion of that. So I think people have read stuff. Some people are, a little bit more confused, but I think this is why, going back to what Julie was saying, actually speaking to a health professional, speaking to the teams and actually finding out, because sometimes if you do it by yourself, you might be led down the wrong route.
Is there something that you do as health professionals that you would do for Black people that you wouldn't do for other communities that's kind of specific? You know, I'm very shy of creating like a jerk rice variant or doing a NHS rap for measles. What, like, how would you connect culturally to that particular audience? What are you doing that's not happening in other communities to really create that impact and conversation? Is there anything that you're doing?
I think maybe just go more into their spaces.
Mm.
So speaking about it in church, speaking about it wherever you go to in terms of where you practice your faith.
Yeah.
Even in terms of, like, I guess, talking to other parents at the school playground, just bringing it up so that people know, okay, they know where to go to get the information that they need. And then also just letting them think about it. Even if they're not ready at that point in time, it will be at the back of their mind. So perhaps if they hear from me today and then tomorrow they hear about the statistics, it might just sort of trigger them. Or if they get a message from their GP, then they'll be like, you know, I spoke to this person about this. Now I'm getting follow-ups from the government or the NHS. Perhaps I should actually look into it a bit more, do my own little research as well. So I think just really just going into spaces and just, listening to what they're saying without being judgmental, because I can be like, okay, I've been where you are, understand why you're having these thoughts. Tell me what's going on. Like, why are you not having it? Even if it sounds crazy that you're maybe too scared to tell your normal GP, tell me and then I won't judge you and I'll just listen and I'll maybe go through the fears with you and be like, okay, why are you saying this? Let's break it down. Does it actually make sense what you're thinking? And then like your experience was so, I think, so valid and so important to hear from lived experience, because I was thinking like, my son had measles, taking 6 weeks off work, because again, I can't leave him at home, so it's going to be me at home and I'm going to be feeling so guilty. I already have my anxiety, it's going to be through the roof. And there's a possible long-term impacts as well, just the fact that he's so young and having that. So I just feel like we need to hear your voice, we need to hear lived experiences from Black people, because we don't hear that. I think we hear, and even when you see pictures, you often see it in, you know, white children. So you feel like maybe it's not something that affects us. But seeing it, hearing from you, Asad, and other people who've been affected, and seeing the actual measles in our skin color, I think these are all very important things.
How important are like community partnerships and, you know, the church, for example, community groups, nonprofits? Because I know a lot of things that happen in our community are people they're doing extra work in some way, trying to improve the outcomes for ourselves. How important are those partnerships to this mission?
So it's very important. So this is actually a big priority right now for NHS England. So we talked about Inspire, but in London, there's been a tremendous effort to set up networks. So there's Muslim health networks. There's networks based on either race, culture, or just a religion. And essentially, we're trying to use assets that are within the community. So rather than things feeling like they're coming from the health system, it feels like it's actually coming from people that you know, people that you relate to. And that trust element is so much stronger if you feel that, oh, my pastor told me that I could actually have the vaccine. So maybe I should have the vaccine. So I think NHS England is really trying to spearhead currently putting communities first in everything that they do. And I think it's really making an impact. And I think as a community, we need to grieve what's happened to us in the past and heal, and also begin to think about what services do we actually want to trust? And I think vaccines should really, really be high up there. We need to start going more for our vaccines as a community.
Yeah. What type of future, if you look back in 5 years' time, what kind of world would you like to look back on? You know, you kind of want this to be a catalyst moment, right? What would you like to see happen?
I guess the uptake of the vaccine, because we're seeing that each year it's increasing year upon year. So we don't want to get to the moment where it's either epidemic or pandemic. People don't want to think about that, but this is stuff that could happen if there's a major outbreak, or we're going to start seeing the long-term complications. You're going to see the impact it's going to have on our healthcare systems as well, in terms of being overwhelmed like we were back in COVID. So I just want to see us start really just making informed decisions, especially within our Black community, because I don't want to look back in 5 years' time and see that we're really the ones that have been affected by this condition long term, in terms of the financial impact if you're having to miss work to look after your kids, or they're left with long-term disabilities, you know, they're now the carer. Yeah, I want to look back and just be like, okay, we heard and we listened and we acted. And that's what I'd like to see.
Is there anything you think anyone else at home, or even your experience or what you went through, that people at home really want to make sure they know and understand?
It's more from, like, Tatapul said, looking, I was a young adult, not realizing that I wasn't vaccinated. Checking up on yourself and your kids will be crucial. Like doctor said, if there's any outbreak, you might be susceptible to that and you won't even know. And then you get sick, you're going to miss days off work, you're going to lose our money, or whatever can happen. And so I think it's just important as an adult yourself, making sure that you're aware of, you know, whether you've had the vaccine as well, and just researching up for yourself, asking other doctors that you feel confident in, who probably look more like you, and seeing, getting their views and their confidence, and ensuring that, you know, this is not something that we would want to break out in the future, which, like the doctor said, is possible.
Yeah. So also, there's no treatment for it either when it happens. So, you know, it's pretty important vaccine. How urgent does that make it when you realise that there actually is no treatment for it?
So, yeah, exactly. So there's no treatment for it, which is why 1 in 5 children end up going into hospital, because essentially they're so unwell at home that other than giving them, you know, water, keeping them nice and cool, you do need to take them for further intervention. And I guess the intervention won't even be antibiotics. It will probably just be giving them lots of fluids, monitoring them, monitoring for any sort of side effects. So again, there's nothing we can do. Once you have it, you can't really reverse the impact it has on your body. The only thing you can try and do is just make sure that you're strong enough to try and combat the infection eventually. So I think that's really just important, and something that people should know. If you've got measles, I can't give you antibiotics to cure you. You just have to really just see yourself, and see yourself child suffer, and obviously try and do what you can to support them in for it. But there's nothing you can do to reverse the.
And then what happens if you're pregnant? Are you able to take the measles vaccine at that particular point? Or
so you should have it before you're pregnant. And the reason why is because in pregnancy, we do know that measles can have quite serious complications if a pregnant woman was to catch the measles who was unvaccinated. So it can lead to your child having a low birth weight. It can lead to premature births. It can even lead to stillbirth. So these are really important complications that people should be aware about. So again, we're talking a lot about the children and young adults, but we're not talking about, you know, pregnant women. When people are going to be bringing forth the next generation, they should also be aware about the possible impacts it can have on them as well.
Doctors, any final words from your end?
So just last thoughts are that, so in 2016, we actually eliminated measles in the UK, and it was an endemic, it wasn't circulating, and we lost that status a few years later. I think that's where we need to get back to. There's something called herd immunity, which means we need to get to 95% uptake. Currently, children in London, for the full courses of MMR at age five, they're at 74%. Wow. So to get to 95, it's a big, big jump. And I think for the Black fathers listening to the podcast and the Black community, I think in Southern Africa, there's a concept called Ubuntu. And it's essentially that I am because you are. And I think we need to come together as a community to look after each other. Because if I'm vaccinated, if you're vaccinated, the people that can't be vaccinated, so people who have allergies, for example, people who are immunocompromised, we're able to protect them because if one person gets ill, they wouldn't spread that illness. So I think we need to think outside of just, you know, if I don't want to have this because I don't want my kid to get a bit, you know, have a side effect of temperature or something, but actually think about everybody else around you and let's all come together to actually make ourselves more healthy.
Wow, brilliant. Yeah. Thank you so much. It's really, really nice to meet you all. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Dope Black Dads podcast. Hopefully you have a lot more information about MMR and measles, specifically in London for the Black community. I have been your host, Marvin Harrison. These have been my amazing guests. And look, I think the most important thing is that stay curious, stay figuring out, stay trying to understand, and make sure you read all the resources around this topic before you make a final decision. But absolutely make sure that you're protecting yourself and your loved ones. Thank you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.